Time for our first Tacky Talk of 2022 with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy. Happy New Year, Tacky.
Happy New Year, Joe. It's great to see you all on this lovely, brisk Wednesday morning.
Yes, as we prepare for our first snowstorm of the season.
It always seems like it comes too early or comes too late, depending what your attitude about snow is.
Yeah, in my opinion, it's always too early, because if I never see that stuff again for as long as I live, it'll be too soon.
Well, please be careful this weekend. It sounds like it's going to be a bit of a messy Friday, potentially maybe 3 to 6 inches or so, but who knows? I mean, it's New England. It may pass by us, or it may dump a whole lot more. We'll find out as we get closer to the Friday.
That's right. How were your holidays?
It was good. I kept a very small family. My brother's family came over from down the street. My brother lives just 3 blocks away, and I was in charge of cooking brunch and dinner. So it was a very busy, tacky household, and me dealing a food brunch and a food dinner plus desserts. And we do a Christmas movie, like a Thanksgiving movie. Obviously, this was really not an option this year, particularly my mother. So we end up doing Disney Plus at home, and watched Jungle Cruise and Shang-Chi. Actually, I've seen Shang-Chi, but the rest of the family has not. So it's a little bit different, but we made it work, and everybody had a good time. And most importantly, we had a chance to spend some time together, which we really have not done much of really in almost 2 years now, practically. And Chinese New Year's rolling around again, about another month. And normally that's another big family celebrational period. And again, I think we're going to have a very muted Chinese New Year.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're starting off the new year very, very slowly with this new Omicron variant, putting a damper on a lot of things. Actually, I was discussing this with a coworker just earlier this morning. The hospitals are full, and I was wondering, why the field hospitals hadn't been reactivated again.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised that field hospital has not been reactivated again, to be honest with you, especially in Worcester at minimum, because Worcester's geography makes it very good for a lot of access points in West Central and Eastern Massachusetts to get to that location for non-life-threatening cases. There are several websites out there, including the state, that puts up hospitalization rates. The last time I looked was before New Year's, and the average 7-day rate, put us in the mid-80s regarding hospitalizations in Boston, basically Suffolk and Norfolk County, and just on the edge of 90% regarding ICU beds. So this is still very serious, and I'm getting a little frustrated with the mixed messaging in the media, because it's really problematic out there. They're talking to get vaccinated, but you got mild symptoms, but the hospitals are being overrun. So which one is it, folks? You can't mix message like this. And even then, word is it's mild symptoms. Well, mild symptoms for who? The vaccinated, unvaccinated, boosted, non-boosted, one shot, two shot? I mean, the media out there has done a, quite frankly, miserable job on conveying information properly. And I largely blame, not just because you only get a very short period of time to convey information, but even written-wise has not been a very good job either, not just on the television and radio. Because these statistics are actually very important to paint a better picture, and we continue to have the problem through COVID-19. Absolutely, absolutely terrible messaging, from the CDC, as you saw, from the media, and that just fuels and makes it more problematic regarding social media and Twitter news that people make on their own to whatever reason to just mess with people, just a lack of consistent messaging.
Right. When you hear hospitals are full, who are they full of? Is it COVID? Is it delayed treatment? What really is going on? Those questions aren't being asked. I think you're right.
Yeah. And they're not being conveyed properly. That's part of the problem. And as I said, I blame the media. I blame the CDC. And like I said, the inconsistent messaging from everywhere just makes it worse for people to understand what's going on, unless you do a usual amount of research, which, as you guys all figured out at this point, I spend way too much time, I think, learning about what's happening around me on this matter. And, even then, as I dig around, it still is very tough to find information properly about what's going on in Omicron. All we know is Omicron is definitely much more infectious than Delta. I mean, there's no question about that. There's same death rate severeness as Delta Alpha and original. I mean, it doesn't kill you faster, but it does get to you faster. Mm-hmm. And you know, incubation rates is much lower. I mean, we're talking 3 days or less. And so far, the vaccinations have proven to reduce the possibility of death and hospitalization. In a general, you know, big picture CDC data, it shows, you know, under 4% hospitalization rate with vaccinated folks, and you know, well under a percentage point for death. So, you know, the vaccines appear to be working. And I always remind folks, if we die and you have COVID, it may not necessarily be the COVID. If you have other underlying conditions or you're already in a severe medical state, you just happen to have another condition while you had COVID, like you had a stroke, but they found you're COVID positive. Well, it's going to be listed as a COVID positive patient, but not, you know, stroke is what killed you.
Right.
It didn't reach that full incubation period for it to get serious damage to your respiratory.
Yeah. The numbers don't tell the whole story. It's true. You know, and it's, you know, we just don't have the time, I think, really, to tell the whole story. You know, history will tell the story about this situation years down the road.
Agreed. It's like other, like SARS, other diseases where you have better data sets. It's 20 years after the fact, you get a good look at. Like, there's a lot of SARS data out, you know, within 5 to 10 years afterwards. Of course, 20 years deep, there's been more research on it over, you know, particularly countries impacted overseas. And you can see better data sets if you kind of pump around and read the research papers. But you know, right now, right, we're still learning as we go. And I do think there's a lot of COVID fatigue on all of us. I mean, we're all feeling it, and there's a lot of frustration going on. And, you know, I think it's COVID fatigue in the media. The media can only hammer this nail so long to the point where, you know, the nail's just, you know, in the wood. How many times can you repeat yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it's true. What do you think about the governor's response, Tacky? You know, one of his strong responses was with the public schools. He does not intend to go remote again.
Well, he's leaving it up to the individual school districts to figure out what to do. But on the flip side, he has, you know, the Department of Secondary Education, you know, running around trying to keep the schools open. So it really is, again, we have a mixed messaging problem, right? And nobody wants to be responsible for this and take the hit associated with it. Now, I mean, you know, I'm legislative. I'm very blessed with the fact that I don't have to make these hard decisions, folks. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and pound my chest and say I'm holier now, but I mean, you know, one of the more legislative branches, I do not have executive power to, you know, implement, you know, mandate school, mandate masks, you know, that kind of stuff. So I don't envy at all the executive branch folks to try to figure out what to do, whether it be mayors, town administrators, board of selectmen, you know, the governor, the president, you know, county officials. Other states have county officials that really is the strength and backbone of their community. So, but you know, again, this is a consistent message in the issue of, you know, for a very long time, well, last summer, you know, the DESE was saying, you know, you can't close the schools, you can't close the schools, everything's in person, but we're going to keep masks on. Okay, but then now we're an Omicron wave, and the response was, we got to keep schools open. What you have, as you saw in Boston, a large wave of infections of students, staff and teachers, and very likely students. And I'm very confident this is happening in many school districts around the state that hasn't even been fully reported about exactly how bad the infection rate is. And, you know, at some point, you know, we need consistent decisions from executive branch folks about what we're doing here. It's always like, well, we're waiting for the governor. The governor's like, well, you guys need to figure this out, but you can't close the school. And it is a real problem. And what is the threshold number here? You know, if your school has one school, let's say you pick a school and you have like, you know, 15% staff infected, you can't get substitute teachers or anybody else. Has anyone talked about the substitute teachers yet? I haven't heard anything. And then you have, let's say, you know, 7%, this is hypothetical, 7% student infection rate, but you know, Omicron is, you know, anywhere between 200, 300, even higher percent infectious than Delta. You know, well, where's the contact tracing? You know, how are you going to start reaching out? And then of course you got the stress on the parents who, you know, had learned more about what the kids are learning than ever at home, but also I guess to work and folks, you know, do not have remote jobs, you know, under even greater stress, because those are the first people we have on the front line still serving us. And we're very thankful for everybody out in the public serving us. you know, whether it be grocery stores or convenience stores or hospitals, you know, anybody who puts themselves in a higher degree of contact with other folks receive higher risk, which also could result in bringing the virus home to their children or to bring it to the schools.
Right.
Again, this is one of those things that it's like, it's not really being talked about out there. And it's, to me, it's quite common sense. But, you know, again, I do not envy the executive branch whatsoever. These are hard decisions to be made. But the lack of a collaborative effort regarding conversation going on, plus just our raw exhaustion of dealing with this, you know, is definitely troubling.
What's the situation at the State House now?
Well, with Omicron roaming around this much in a building has no ventilation, clearly we're not going to be opening buildings to the public anytime soon. But again, staff and legislators are allowed to utilize the offices. We are required to do contact tracing if we're there. But also at the same time, me and my staff had more of a conversation. We're going to have another conversation soon because we're having a final public hearing on January 10th. And the current remote structure works. I mean, we spent a lot of time trying to perfect the current system we have now as painless as possible for the public to do testimony, as well as access me and the staff for meetings and whatnot. For let you all know, folks, we didn't get new laptops until November. So I suppose no, I've been operating on this little guy and in my previous version on video calls, which has caused a lot of eye strain, more so. But my other staffers had to improvise their personal equipment, which weren't designed for this high level of video use. As I think everyone on the call has now discovered, if you guys are using a lot of video camera, you know, it wears down your equipment.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if it's not, you know, the newest technology, it can be frustrating to even run these applications just because of memory, you know, restrictions.
Yeah, and you get the choppy picture, you get choppy sound. And again, we discovered that even though we're a very high income, high technology, high educated area, internet is still a huge issue, not just in rural areas, but also in urban areas, as we discovered by a slowdown because of online learning increased the bandwidth locally in your area. I've had that demonstration here where my signal either got dropped or choppier as the bandwidth became challenging for cable and internet providers to try to adjust, as well as cell phone usage was enormously higher, which some of you probably had a few dropped calls as well as connection issues. So, you know, the digital divide is not strictly a rural area. It's definitely an urban area as well.
I think there's been a delayed rollout of 5G by some of the major carriers, at least in the urban areas, mostly because of airplane travel.
Yeah, this is again the technology question of lack of understanding about whether or not 5G will cause disruption with airplane equipment. Everyone knows turn off your cell phone before the airplane takes off. Very common thing we've all lived with, anybody who doesn't need air travel. Then they changed that. You can have the device on, but you have airplane mode, and now they're allowing people to use the device. But if you can somehow latch on the signal at 5,000 feet in the sky, I mean, that, you know, good luck to you. You know, obviously, wireless technology has changed like air travel. And it's an overabundance of caution again from the FAA associated with any potential interference equipment, because no kidding, folks, airplane equipment interference can be real bad for everybody on that plane. So I think the abundance of caution is justifiable. But hopefully, you know, studies are done very quickly and regarding 5G and its impact on potentially, you know, potentially impacting air travel, but also, you know, impacting very sensitive equipment. I would hope with today's engineering and science, they can make this determined fairly soon.
Do you think any of the federal pandemic relief money, Tacky, can be used here in Quincy for the municipal broadband effort?
We do have money that we approved in the ARPA money already that is required to be used for broadband expansion. Some of it is dedicated to broadband infrastructure expansion on local use, not just in rural infrastructure, but also in urban infrastructure. And a place like Boston, particularly, a lot of infrastructure is underground. And underground infrastructure is very hard to wire. You guys can, it's common sense, folks, right? It's
Yeah, you got to dig up miles of streets.
it's pretty involved. So, but I mean, is there anything specific for municipal broadband expansion? I don't believe there is. I mean, There are very few municipally owned broadband companies, and Braintree just gave up theirs.
That's right. Yeah.
Put those out of bid, and it's going to be in the private hands very soon. So I'm sure the administration here in Quincy will try to figure out, you know, if they can access some of that broadband, but it's really designed for underserved communities as the target audience for that. So low-income urban areas as well as rural areas that in suburban communities that doesn't have the proper infrastructure to have higher speed internet.
Sure, sure. So is the budget process beginning anew here in 2022?
Well, the last Wednesday in January, the governor's going to make his recommendation, which is, I believe, January 26th. I tell folks, it's just a recommendation. Don't get too excited about it. The House and the Constitution has the power of appropriation. So we get to make the final first decision before the Senate goes and makes their second decision.
Right.
Conference the committee to bail out and send a final proposal to the governor. But the governor does provide a guidepost about his priorities and the needs of the Commonwealth. And we use that as a guidepost to see where we're going. And obviously there's 160 of us. So, you know, we have our own different priorities and concerns. So we'll make that known to Ways and Means. Ways and Means meetings of membership will probably start sometime in the February zone way, I think. And we should have, you know, relatively on time schedule to get to debate. I don't anticipate any changes to the so-called normal schedule that I've lived with my whole life until COVID hit on the budget processes. And we talked about revenue consensus last time. Mm. You know, it's going to be higher than FY22. So, those are numbers we're going to be playing with. The governor will use the consensus number for his budget. Mm-hmm. And as projections change as we get deeper into the year, obviously the House and Senate will slightly change their consensus number based on the newest data from Department of Revenue, as well as economists around the state providing feedback on what the future state looks like. But it is very uncertain. None of us expected last year's numbers to be very good.
Right.
We expect massive GDP spike, not just in Massachusetts, but nationwide. None of expected unemployment to move so quickly down after, you know, the highest numbers since the Great Depression. As you can tell, I do have a degree of caution here because it's just so unpredictable.
Right. Yeah. It's you know, people are arguing. Some economists argue it's an artificial inflation spike because of all the stimulus money that has, you know, been given out by the government.
And some people who are fortunate enough to have higher incomes were able to save quite a bit of money.
Right.
And now they feel they need to spend money to address needs they have not been able to address several years regarding home and health and other things, or in some cases, straight up retail therapy.
Yeah.
In some folks.
Yes.
which explains a lot of supply chain issues and things like that. But of course, hoarding has stopped, thankfully.
Yes.
Which was really kind of silly at one point. But I mean, people are stocking up in terms of, you know, smart. I mean, I've not hoarded. I mean, you know, I've gone back to my regular purchases based on the regular schedule that I've always had prior to pandemic. And, you know, my objective was always before pandemic, because I only want to go to BJ's X number of months at a time. I don't want to go to BJ's every week.
Right, right. Yeah, that's what those stores are designed for, is, you know, what just kind of monthly stock ups.
Exactly, as opposed to people, you know, buying, you know, monthly stock up for like half a year.
Right.
You know, it's kind of crazy, but, you know, I don't anticipate any more of that. And there's also the no social media driving the hoarding right now too. I mean, a lot of hoarding from the first time out in 2020 was actually very much social media driven by basically bad information. For those who didn't hear me last year early on, you know, we found out that from the Taiwanese government that they're massive run on things like toilet papers because they thought, oh, the toilet paper was made in China. And that's not true. It's domestically made. And same thing with the Japanese, same issue. And in other places in Asia, we're getting bad social media saying that all your surgical masks were made from toilet paper. It's the same product. And the answer, no, that's not true either. So it's shocking, absolutely shocking. Again, the impact on social media and frankly, fake news to drive a hoarding behavior. And you think it's kind of harmless on the surface, but it really isn't. It really isn't. Causes a crazy amount of panic. And, you know, you saw the run on things like flour here, for example, right?
Yes. Yep.
yeast, because everyone's baking at home because they're afraid they can't have bread, which is an important staple comfort food for most folks. And in Asian communities and countries, rice is a staple. Mm-hmm. And, those are run on rice.
Yeah, it is pretty astounding to see the impact that it can have. People, put their trust in sometimes what they see on social media as opposed to quote unquote mainstream media or government officials.
Well, yeah, one account suddenly becomes a wave, kind of like COVID-19. I mean, it's kind of funny that way. The COVID virus, has the same effect. You get one person, it spreads like a wave to infect a lot of folks.
Yeah,
one person seemingly sensible account suddenly becomes a wave as well, infecting a lot of people with incorrect information.
Yeah, and it also was a large contributor to January 6th of 2021. Tacky, we're approaching the 1 year anniversary of the insurrection on the Capitol. What are your feelings about that?
Well, here's another funny one. There's a movement out there regarding vaccine mandates, and there's another protest run on all capitals in the country as well.
Yeah.
So people don't know this because, it wasn't really well published, but when we had our security briefing last year, the January 6th riot, insurrection, whatever you want to call it, wasn't limited to just the U.S. Capitol. There was a move to try to do every state simultaneously and attempt overrun of every state capital. This was not just a Washington effort.
Hmm.
Thankfully, in Massachusetts, there aren't as many groups that go to that level of extreme view that's sufficiently organized to try to put hundreds of people to willing to just pound their way through state house doors. But we did see that in Michigan, for example. That did happen. It just didn't get the same amount of coverage regarding attempted run at their capital. A place like Oregon, places never think as being a place to get violent protesters. Oregon was never one of the places I would think of. But no, they were preparing for possibly as well.
Hmm.
So after the January 6th riot last year, the state house was under very high security for many days. And security is continuing to be very high. It's just not with barricades and National Guardsmen. But the building is being heavily monitored, as well as all the surrounding areas adjacent to the building, by state troopers, as well as Boston City Police. And of course, our friends in the federal government, the FBI and other intelligence agencies, continue to coordinate with state and local officials what the possibility of any kind of domestic terror near state capitals, which, in Boston, we're a dense state capital. People live next to the state house.
Mm-hmm.
When you do anything to the state house, it's going to have a ripple effect on residents and businesses immensely. Obviously, we're still continuing on high alert. Elected officials are supposed to continue cognizant of surroundings. We get no police protection guys, so I don't have troopers following me around. It's something we often keep in contact if we think there's any concern regarding our own personal safety with local police. And
yeah.
That's all we can do for our front. But it's really, they're really super focused, for lack of a better term, taking down a Capitol building.
Yeah, I saw a report out not too long ago about a study done of the backgrounds, the demographics of the people who were in the nation's capital on that day. And surprisingly, it was not what you would think of as extremist groups. It was more, mainstream, white-collar professionals who had a lot to lose by putting themselves out that day.
You're absolutely correct. I mean, the myth out there is it's just folks that are lower educational, lower income bracket, predominantly white and rural communities that are, these anti-establishment folks, so to speak, or anti-government or pro-Trump people, whatever you guys want to say regarding the various folks that show up at the January 6th riot last year. And I think there'll be more studies and documents coming out as people continue to study the situation, sociologists and so forth, not just a criminal matter, but also a human behavioral matter about this demographic and what motivated them to take the action they did. There is certain commonalities, I think, is kind of the myth that that somehow they'll be protected from their actions. Their illegal activity would somehow be justified and protected by the federal government.
Mm.
Or the public, or the president, you know, a former president. It seems to be a little bit of a common thread there, but I don't want to speculate way too much. But I agree. I think, again, social media, I think, you know, people have these stereotype misconceptions, as we discussed before. I'm very familiar with stereotypes about what various demographics look like with certain political ideologies. And, you know, and it's not correct. And a lot of these people were your neighbors. They're not folks that, you know, exhibited any kind of dangerous or odd behavior. Not surprising, you know, many of these folks seem, and again, it's still too early for me to say this, but, you know, perhaps, you know, a good portion of first-time offenders.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. Yeah. And I wonder too, you know, how much of it was racially motivated. I mean, that hasn't really been talked about much, but I think that's a factor.
The first thing we noted was the fact that, you know, when BLM marches was in DC, you know, they had pretty much the entire National Guard and military on standby. And, you know, we saw about the tear gassing of folks as the former president tried to get to a church for a PR display. You know, meanwhile, they have, you know, hundreds of people gathered for a presidential rally, plus folks not in that crowd that federal intelligence knew there were other folks there that could have been and did become problematic. Mm. And there was no National Guard rollout. And yeah, the video does show that's predominantly white folks that stormed the Capitol. And that is not lost on a lot of us, where, you know, you have an unusual amount of police presence when people of color, especially Black folks, are out there protesting, but you don't see the same level of protection or police or military presence when it's not. This is not lost on folks, and it's clearly a bias out there and a common misconception, which again, the media films and then creates a misconception among the general public that certain races are more dangerous than others. And again, these are very, in the media case, unintentional. It's like the media only sees what it sees. But the people in power to put that out there feeds these negative stereotypes in our minds.
Well, yeah, a lot of questions. You know, no answers right now for sure. Just, I think the goal is not to let it happen again.
No, absolutely. I'm sure that the security level is very high in D.C. as well as state capitals this week. I don't think there's going to be any problems. I mean, I'm aware of some of these QAnon theories about, you know, when is truly when the president's sworn in and all this other, you know, stuff that that just doesn't work or happen. It's also interesting how every time a conspiracy goes by and nothing happens, people seem to want to continue a conspiracy that doesn't exist. And you know, people are taking the outliers as the norm because it justifies their position. So, I mean, you know, a negative incident regarding, as I like to put it, to medical care, one negative incident, people assume it's now the norm. Conversely, the norm is now a massive COVID death rate, but vaccines are something it won't take because a small number of folks have a poor reaction to it. Meanwhile, we're at 800,000 and counting dead folks, plus, you know, 10 to 50% of infected folks being in severe medical care. And suddenly, you know, that's the norm. But they don't want to acknowledge that's the norm. It's really an interesting phenomenon, and it's a very sad norm, but it is the norm we're living in right now.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about international politics and what's going on in Ukraine, Jackie.
Yeah, that is an interesting one. I kind of mentioned before that Biden is definitely not Trump or Obama. You know, I did say Obama, I thought, was kind of soft on Russia regarding Ukraine and the Crimea invasion. And Trump administration showed zero interest in national security regarding Europe, because, you know, the securitization of first world countries, particularly our allies and capitalist democratic countries, is actually too important for global trade as well as our own national security. Mm-hmm. You know, I fully expect that Biden will be considering much more hardline. I remind folks he's more of a Cold War president because of age. You know, he will not tolerate a Russian aggression. Sanctions are great, but I mean, the Russian economy is not very strong. I know it's a I mean, it's a $1.5 trillion economy, a GDP, I think. But I mean, we're $23 billion GDP. I mean, folks, I don't think people understand exactly how big we are in the United States compared to other places to generate wealth. And we are, you know, without a doubt, the biggest generator of wealth on the planet combined. I mean, if you include China and the next like seven countries down, I mean, it takes that many to overcome the size of our GDP.
Right.
So I don't think economic sanctions are going to work much more. They've been strangling these guys regarding coal and oil and gas exports out of Russia, which is the pretty much only export they have that anybody wants. And, you know, I do expect that the U.S. and NATO are going to, you know, make some kind of presence. And, of course, you know, the Russians don't want any country bordering them to be a NATO country.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. I mean, you don't want to have any neighboring countries to be part of a strategic defense alliance next year for two good reasons. One, you don't want a foreign military that close to you that's, you know, super powerful, that has technology, very advanced technology and the U.S. backing. And secondly, of course, is that you can exert your political will on a neighboring country that doesn't have a strong military power.
Right. It's what led to the Cuban Missile Crisis in the 60s.
Yeah, I mean, it's all a different place, but similar situation, right?
Yeah.
So again, it's a very Cold War-ish type situation. So it wouldn't surprise me, you know, if the U.S. actually has to flex the military muscles by demonstrating we can make an appearance when we want to make an appearance.
Mm.
And I think the other countries, you know, including China, have this misconception that this is a war-weary country. And we are a war-weary country, but also a country that has been engaged in military conflicts globally since the days of the revolution.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at our U.S. military, we've been very active in global affairs as well as domestic affairs, meaning wars with Mexico, right? Way back in the 1800s, right? You know, securing our domestic borders. Whether you agree or disagree about this, this is a larger historical debate, right? But this is a fact. We've been out securing our borders throughout the 1800s and into the 1900s, securing our global trade. You know, and part of that is military strength and a very strong Navy. Second, the Navy was the priority for the colonial government, not the Secretary of the Army.
Right.
You know, because of the nature of our trade. So, you know, I do think that you're going to see more military presence in Southeast Asia, as well as in the Ukraine area, you know, through the Mediterranean and other locations. You know, and also about withdrawal from Afghanistan allows us to reallocate resources on the military level. So, and of course, you know, this is a very good point. I hope everyone understands this. And if you're not good to your friends and allies, and you're not there for one of them when something bad happens, your other friends and allies are looking at you like, well, we can't rely on you.
That's right.
This is same as any relationship we have in real life with your friends and family. If one of your friends and family doesn't follow through or stick it to you, the other friends and family see that happen and they become very cautious of that one person that stuck it to you. This is very common sense relationship issues. And those common sense relationships actually do apply to international politics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, obviously they ask themselves, what if that were to happen to me? Are they going to leave me high and dry too?
And that's exactly it. And this, and it's given the fact that you're dealing with major powers and major militaries that can strike anywhere with their neighbors. And we're very fortunate in the United States that we've never had a true devastating military attack from a foreign nation since 1812. Obviously, 9/11 is a terrorist attack. We've had some odd Japanese bombings, you know, balloon bombs and invasion of one Alaskan island during World War II. I mean, people don't realize there was one little piece of Alaska that was invaded by Japan that no one seemed to care about because it was one barren island. You know, technically we were invaded, if you can count that. But I mean, people here have been very blessed by the fact that we have faced like carpet bombing a city, for example.
You right. Know? Yeah. We you know, talked to people who in London who lived through that and they had a much different experience, certainly.
Yeah, and that really shapes our vision regarding military conflicts.
Right.
If you've been scarred by a war, you can see the scars in your home, and not just deaths of people, but destruction of infrastructure and disruption of way of life, not for one day, but for decades to mm-hmm. come. it shapes how you think about these things.
Yeah.
And like I said, this country is extremely blessed to not have to deal with those crises, to form a land invasion of the United States, even in a modern era. It's her lurking and task to make it happen. There's been only one successful major military sea-based invasion. And I mean major military, I mean just like able to move enough army to take over a country like now. It's us. We did this for Normandy with enormous loss of life. But it's the only successful in the history of the world land invasion of that scale where you can really just move enough equipment to start a full-scale invasion of a country as soon as you land. In the modern era with much more modernized weapons and defense systems, particularly among first world countries, nations, and locales, that becomes increasingly difficult.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Of course, now we have North Korea launching another missile just yesterday.
Well, it's a happy new year from our favorite dictator, Kim, setting up in North Korea. Happy new year, folks. Here's another ballistic. And again, this is a neighbor issue, right? We have a military presence in both Japan and South Korea. Japan continues to be the third largest GDP, one of our largest allies, both militarily but also economically.
Yeah,
they're prohibited from leaving their island for military by constitution. Mm-hmm. And of course, South Korea, I mean, most of us don't even know what it's like living next to a country where they can bombard you with World War I artillery.
Right.
You don't need ballistic missiles to bomb South Korea. You can do it with just ancient weapons, to be mm-hmm. honest with you, mm-hmm. comparatively speaking, and living under that continuous type of tension. So again, the U.S. response is very important, to major economies, but also places that we've been very partnered and friends with for, oh my God, it's been like 75 plus years, right, at this point.
Yep, that's right. Let's talk about state politics, Decky. Mari Healy going to run for governor, you think?
Oh, every week I hear is what she's going to announce.
Well, she raised like $500,000 in just 1 month, so it looks pretty good.
It looks pretty good. I mean, there's been two declared, well, let me clarify that. The two people who expressed interest in running for attorney general, one sort of kind of declared, which personally I find is bad form. I personally think you shouldn't announce a run for someone's job until that person actually said no for the job. But professional courtesy seems to be lost in this planet these days. I do think professional courtesy is very important. It seems to be that she's going to go. The question is when, and nomination papers will be out in February, and she's going to get 10,000 signatures to get on the ballot. So, and the Democratic caucuses are coming up in February, and that's where you get a good chance to make your pitch to, really dedicated people who campaign and show up at the conventions at the Democratic caucuses. It may be virtual, I think likely be virtual again at this time out. In some ways, time is running a bit short because you need to get your surrogates in place at caucuses to say some kind words about you, part of the caucus process. But everyone says, it was going to be the week before New Year's, get a big splash during a slow news week. And it became, it's right after New Year's. And then, maybe next week. So I don't think it's a matter of if she is doing it. I think it's down to when she announces. It's going to be like the worst, best kept secret. The splash isn't going to be there, folks. I mean, the media will cover it and try to make it like, ooh, sexy time and, all this wonder and set off some fireworks. But, I mean, those of us in Democratic politics are kind of like, we're not really surprised. And I don't think anyone watching this call is going to be surprised either.
No, a bigger surprise would be if Marty Walsh announces, right?
That would be correct. If you have two gorillas in the room, so to speak, in politics, taking each other in primary, now it becomes boring to super exciting, but also creates new controversy because now it divided up the Democratic base.
That's true. Yeah.
And, of course, leading the Biden administration, we know that Marty Walsh is very close to Joe Biden, and this is a state that still has okay poll ratings for Biden. And Marty left not on negative poll ratings as well out of Austin. What does that mean? And we'll wait and see. Large campaign trust, the ability to put an organization statewide fairly quickly. Marty actually has somewhat of a luxury not to announce right away if he so desires to do so. But he's also gone really quiet in the last week. He had a good run of media going to Christmas and then nothing. and people speculate that, you know, this Build Back Better, so-called Build Back Better proposal in D.C. is not truly dead. I mean, they still have another session year to go through, right? So, and, you know, Marnie's...
I don't think Joe Manchin is going to get on board ever.
Yeah, he's got other problems we talked about regarding his local poll numbers being very strong and being an obstructionist right now.
Right.
And that is a political problem because all politics start at home, right? All politics does not start in D.C. But Marty,
that's how you get to D.C. is from home, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Marty has actually a big role in the Build Back Better program as Secretary of Labor. So that's a hard opportunity to pass up if the federal government can pass this actually life-changing for many folks program package that they'll be a stand of test of time for 10 plus years. And whatever the administration does is set up, if it happens, to set up the next decade on programs, you know, it's something Marty can make a significant part of his career. So yeah. Like, a lot of questions, no big answers. I don't know what he's thinking. I've talked to some people that are more involved with Marty, and they're not sure what he's thinking.
I'm curious that the Biden administration hasn't really piggybacked on the success of Obamacare, you know, and trying to sell this, because I mean, that's kind of a piece of it, and Joe Biden was intricately involved in that.
Yeah, the ACA. People love the ACA, but hate Obamacare.
That's right.
ACA, but I hate Obamacare.
Like, yeah, same thing, folks.
But I think at this point also, I think the Biden administration, you know, it's been over a dozen years out from the ACA.
Yeah.
You know, your legacy is built on yours, not someone else's.
Yeah.
And this is a little bit different because, you know, unlike the ACA, this is actually strengthening programs that haven't been touched since the Johnson administration.
Sure, yeah.
And we're living in an aging, changing world. And you and I are moving to that demographic where we're the next big balloon. Not to be self-serving, but you know, these programs they're talking about actually will work for our age in another decade.
Right, right.
As we grow older, these, you know, newer programs will be in place to address an aging population as well as a new younger families coming up as well, and all socioeconomic levels. So I know it's a big package. We're not going to hash it out here because it's too much stuff. But the intention is a decades of change, not a 1 year benefit. But DC and the nature of elections being every 2 years for Congress, every 6 years on a rotating cycle in the Senate, the president's of 4 years, long-term thinking is hard. For these folks, because the electorate only remembers the last thing you've done. You know, people watching this call, you know, may not realize this, but most of you can't think of anything I did 8 years ago. Even though it was in Quincy Sun and covered by Ledger and sometimes I'm on television. But I mean, does anybody remember, you know, what I did all through April to June on Asian racism issues? Likely some of you probably may remember listening to this, but probably a lot of you forgot about it already.
Sure.
It's actually one of the kind of quirky problems of elected officials on two-year terms, such as myself, is the fact that, you know, trying to get people from what it did to even 1 year ago is actually challenging. And this is actually one of the hard parts of Democratic politics in America that actually most democracies don't have to deal with, is that it can be hard on long-term planning because you won't see the work we've done for 5, 6, maybe 10 years. And I always use energy as my number one thing because obviously you guys all know I do a lot of energy policy in my life, even though I don't really focus on that as much as the committee chairman now. But I mean, a lot of stuff on green energy, a lot of stuff on expansion of alternative energy, non-coal, non-fossil-based energy, took decades to build. But you know, back when it worked for Michael Morrissey, no, we established the deregulation of electrical infrastructures, meaning generation electricity was separated out from the wires. Utilities could no longer sell you power, had been privately generated. And through those early efforts and things like renewable energy credits, new mandates on how much we have to buy of renewable power, I mean, renewable energy, particularly wind, it went from 50, 70 cents per kilowatt hour down to 5 cents per kilowatt hour today.
And we're only just now starting to see wind farms being developed.
Yeah, but we didn't take this action 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't have wind farms coming on Block Island.
Right.
mostly I can't remember. Most likely, you know, Michael Morrissey's, you know, very actually historical work on privatizing energy supply. But if we never did that, you wouldn't have things trying to do like Hydro Quebec, which you talked a little bit earlier.
Yep.
As well as wind farm development now.
Yep.
Again, the problem of policymaking at our level is that you don't really see the outcome, you know, for many years down the road.
Yeah, yeah. It's yeah, what have you done for me lately? Yeah, that's the question the voters ask. Yeah.
Yeah, and a very big challenge in 2-year election cycles that Congress faces. And then 1/3 of the Senate changes over the time, you know, in a 6-year cycle.
Yeah.
So you know, this is kind of things, you know, a little inside baseball, but this is kind of one of the challenges we always face. You know, same with the city council and depending what city or town, the mayor and board of selectmen. You know, continued communication about, you know, visible impact in your lives regarding your elected officials and what it means. And some stuff has impacted your lives, but it's been so subtle behind the scenes, you never realize you reap the benefits of it.
Right, right. Taggy, this is the point in the program where we ask people to contact you.
Sure, 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. Smash a button to a staffer, leave a voicemail. We get our voicemails sent to computers by email. Please do leave a phone number. I'm now finding out from staff, people don't seem to leave phone numbers. We can't call you back. Actually, the statehouse phones don't have good caller ID as well. Even when we're in the office, we don't have good caller ID. So it's hard to find you. We don't know how to find you. So please leave us a way to find you. And you can email me at tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. Again, you know, leave some contact information so we can get back to you. A phone call is so much faster than email, as I live in this virtual world, hating email every day more than my life. My Facebook page, State Representative Taggy Chan. It's a public page. No need to be a Facebook user to come take a peek. Next public hearing is January 10th. The notice has already gone out. So if you want to go see us on Monday, I believe 1 o'clock, you can watch my last public hearing for into bill reporting meeting, reporting on February 2nd. We will have more public hearings post February 2nd as so-called late file bills. That comes in after January 2nd. We have to get hearings done on those. And of course, tackyshare.org is just a resource page people are looking for. Some phone numbers on local community services and websites, and that can kind of accelerate helping you out as opposed to trying to track me down. And of course, QATV, if you want to see past episodes of the two of us talking heads together, you're welcome to do that as well.
Absolutely. We're there for the taking.
Yeah, get Joe some more web hits, folks. He wants us as web hits to go up.
It wouldn't hurt. we don't make any money off it, so it wouldn't hurt. Any public appearances for you, Taggy?
Yeah, put it this way, guys. This is jobs. This is a demonstration of Joe's job performance. Hit the like button.
Exactly. Yes. It'd be good for my year-end review. We're going to see you out in public anywhere in Quincy, Taggy?
It doesn't appear to be a whole lot of things going on. I'm aware there's a vigil tomorrow evening, but the weather is getting bad quick. So
yeah.
Regarding the January 6th riot, Democratic City Committee is doing an event tomorrow night over, I believe, United Methodist Church, basically, for, you know, the Christian presence for the City Hall. I believe they're going to try to put a small thing together, but it is getting colder, folks. Omicron's getting scary, and the dry weather makes it easier for virus to transmit because there's no not enough humidity to drag down the viruses. So obviously, I'm not, you know, if you can go, I probably won't go. I'll be honest with you, folks. I get sick of the drop of a dime between December and April. Like those who dealt with me in public for years know that I'm not a healthy human being for about 4 months of the year. So I've been trying to reduce my possibly my immune system getting wacky.
Sure. Yeah.
But beyond that, I mean, the Lunar Festival of Quijiji Resources is the first Sunday in February. It's likely going to go virtual at this stage. I'm aware that's various TET festivals in the Vietnamese community that's not in Quincy. I think you're going to have to make decisions about whether that day can stay in person. And my friends, and this is kind of a tough situation, I have a friend who works in hospitality hotel, and that particular hotel, which is a major hotel, I won't get into too much details because it's his life, not mine, And it went from a census of 40% to 9% overnight during the holiday season when Omicron went full steam.
Wow.
So, you know, people, you know, please do try to take out your local businesses. Again, I encourage people to make phone calls, use the websites if you want to use local retail. And, you know, please do be kind to our dry cleaners. They can use some help, you know, to try to, you know, keep their local economy going if you can afford to do that. You can spare a couple
yeah, of all the things that we've been doing, right? Yeah.
And retail and restaurants are going to try to accommodate you the best they can.
Yeah.
And they will. But I mean, it's important for us to do our part to want to make that phone call, want to visit our website, you know, and work with our retail folks to keep their business going, but also keep them and ourselves safe.
Yep, absolutely. Good to talk to you, Tacky. And again, happy, healthy 2022.
You too. Happy, healthy start to the year. And hopefully it's a very silent start to the new year regarding any major news, more major news. And I'll see you in about a week's time.
Sounds good. All right. Thanks again.